And hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Andy Bombick, which means, once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with a novel that I've been reading now for about almost 8 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Brown Sugar Babe. And then it's Khalil and Mr. Haggerty and the Backyard Treasures. Alfred Blooms. And then I'm going to read my all-time favorite picture book that I've read on the program a number of times, titled The Short and Incredibly Happy Life of Riley. And then I'll read a few of the Wallace and Ladmo Show Presents Aunt Maud's Storybook. And those are some myths. And if we have time, I'll finish up the first half hour with some poems from Shel Silverstein titled Everything on It. So, it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Brown Sugar Babe. When you were born, it was dark behind your sleeping eyes. Blackish, reddish brown, before the grand surprise. When you blinked and beheld a world of color. I'm pink, you declared, once you grew a tad older. Pink, you whispered, then shouted much bolder. You're brown like me, I said, raising your hands to the sun. Beautiful, precious brown, my little one. I don't want to be brown, said little brown you. Brown isn't sunny or yummy or cute. Brown, I said, bubbling brown sugar babe, honeyed and bright as marmalade. Your brown eyes are chocolate drops, brown sugar babe, your hair a crown of brown curls, fierce as a lion's mane. Look at those brown legs, sturdy funnels of stone, your brown arms, wiry and strong as knuckle bone. Stick around, brown sugar babe. Brown is silent, a raisin crinkling in the sun. Tree rings that tell time ever since year one. A sand dollar glinting on the beach in winter. Clay turning to mud after a cloudburst of rain splinters. Our brown hands clasp tight when a zigzag of lightning strikes. Brown is loud, the bassy grumble of ocean waves, rumbling roar of blistery wind, the crunch of peanuts between our teeth, the squeal of a violin. Brown is a desert when copperheads stun. Brown is a plum, spurting sweetness on our tongues. Brown is dusk before day turns to twilight. Brown is feet marching for human rights. Brown is a tutu and a ballet slippers, poised to take flight. Brown is an after-bedtime story. Kiss, good night. Our world is a feast of color, pink, black, yellow, blue, green, and red, and brown has its own special flavor, like yams, jam, morels, toast, and gingerbread. Brown tastes like pancakes and syrup, and caramel and spice, cider and biscotti, tortillas and tea flavored ice. Brown is soft as rabbit's foot fur. Brown is prickly as porcupine whiskers. Brown smells like pine cones and mulberry bush, wood chips, coffee beans, and purple asparagus. Brown is a laughing sound, raspy and hoarse. Fingers snapping, toes tapping, singing and dancing, of course. Brown is quicksilver, brilliant, a fast-moving storm. Brown is as old as the first star, before even the earth was born. Brown lasts forever, like the roots of this tree called life. And our love branches, reading toward the heavens above. Now, why is there anything else you'd rather be? Besides brown sugar, babe, I said, brown like me? Khalil and Mr. Haggerty and the Backyard Treasures. Khalil's new house had an up and a down. Upstairs lived his family, which was big and busy and noisy. Downstairs lived Mr. Haggerty, who was quiet. Khalil loved the backyard, so did Mr. Haggerty. While Mr. Haggerty worked in his garden, Khalil hunted for bugs and interesting rocks. He lay in the grass and read his library books. Sometimes, if he couldn't figure out a word, he'd ask for help. Mr. Haggerty would squint through his glasses. Tarantula, Mr. Haggerty would say quietly, or volcano, or doubloons. Sometimes Mr. Haggerty needed help with his words, too. Where did I put my digging thing, my hole maker, my shovel? Look at this bag. Not beeper, not beastie, beetle. That summer, the house was hot, upstairs and downstairs. It was much too hot. Even in the backyard, the sun burned and the air sizzled. One morning, when Khalil went out, everything looked droopy, even Mr. Haggerty. Khalil decided this would be a good day to find buried treasure. The ground was hard to dig. Khalil found a few things, but not what anyone would call treasure. Mr. Haggerty dug, too. He found some carrots, but they were small and shriveled. The word for this was discouraging. We need refreshments, said Mr. Haggerty. Refreshments turned out to mean big pieces of chocolate cake and tall, cold glasses of milk. Soon, Khalil and Mr. Haggerty both felt much better. Maybe we'll be luckier tomorrow, said Khalil. Maybe, said Mr. Haggerty. Upstairs that night, Khalil had an idea. Downstairs, so did Mr. Haggerty. First thing in the morning, Khalil raced down into the yard. Mr. Haggerty was already there. He looked excited as Khalil. You better get digging, he said, and his voice was not the least bit quiet. You too, said Khalil. This was when something wonderful happened. Two somethings. No sooner did Mr. Haggerty put his shovel in the dirt than he dug up a big, juicy carrot. That would have been wonderful enough, but then Khalil found buried treasure. This calls for refreshments, he said. They celebrated with carrot sticks and chocolate cake. It's our lucky day, said Khalil. Lucky's the word, said Mr. Haggerty. That night, as Khalil looked out his window upstairs, he thought of another word, a very good word, one of the best words of all. Downstairs, so did Mr. Haggerty. Friend. Alfred Blooms. Lulu lived at one end of the street. Alfred lived at the other. Everybody loved Lulu. Her garden was full of flowers and fruit trees and friends. Lulu had so much to share. Alfred had a garden too. But even though he watered and waded, carted and carried, and sang to his seeds every day, Alfred's garden was empty. His seeds wouldn't sprout, his flowers withered, and friends? They walked right by. I give up, Alfred stormed. But then he spotted the wildflower seeds. He waffled, he wavered. Finally, Alfred reached out and picked a packet of wildflower seeds. Just one more try. He tore open the package, closed his eyes, made a wish, and then, ka-choo! His sneeze blew the seeds into the wind, and the wind tossed them right back at Alfred. Seeds in his ears, seeds in his pockets, seeds in his nose. Alfred wilted into the dirt. The sky grew dark above him. Thunder, rain, of course. Alfred lay in the mud, stuck in all his mistakes. He had nothing to share with his neighbors, no blooms to brighten their day. But then the wind blew again, bringing news from the bakery. Blueberry muffins! Alfred always brought muffins for Lulu on Fridays because blueberry muffins were her favorite. He lifted his head just an inch, squelch. Then the sun peeked through just enough. Alfred dragged himself out of the mud. On the way to the bakery, Alfred noticed a tickle on his scalp, a wiggle on his head. Alfred reached up and felt a flower, two flowers, a head full of flowers. What a disaster! This was not at all what he'd planned. He tried to stuff the flowers under his hat. He hunched his shoulders and grew small and stony so no one around him would notice. But wildflowers grow in even the rockiest crevices. Two muffins, please, he whispered, his face shadowed under the brim of his hat. But wildflowers grow in even the shadiest nooks and the most surprising places. Now everyone would notice. Even the bees and butterflies found him. And there was Lulu, smiling. And here was Alfred, a mess. He squeezed his eyes shut. Hello, Alfred, said Lulu. Do you need help picking your nose? Alfred opened his eyes just to peek. Oh, no, he thought. But, yes, please, he whispered. Lulu gently removed the flower, then transplanted it into her garden. Just the color I've been searching for. Thank you, Alfred, for sharing it. She sat back on her heels to admire her garden. Beautiful. She looked up at Alfred. Beautiful. They ate their muffins in the sun. They fed the butterflies. Alfred grew thirsty, so Lulu watered him. Fridays are my favorite, said Lulu. Because of the muffins? Asked Alfred. No, silly, laughed Lulu, because Fridays mean time with you. Alfred felt his heart blooming and knew he had something to share. And though Alfred's garden never did grow, something even sweeter bloomed. And here is my all-time favorite picture book that I've read on the program a number of times, titled The Short and Incredibly Happy Life of Riley. Everyone wants to live forever. They want to be happy and healthy. Some of these things are actually quite difficult, but some of them are really easy, which might seem surprising because most people hardly manage any of them, at least not all of the time. None of this bothered Riley, and Riley is a rat. Riley had been born happy. His earliest memory was being with his brothers and sisters and mom in a big bed with plenty of food and no rain. He was always happy, even when he was asleep. He was beautiful and everyone loved him. He was the best, and so were his brothers and sisters and mom. All Riley wanted was some fruit and maybe a couple of slugs on Tuesday or Friday or now and then. People, of course, want more than that, which is a shame because it's about all you need, apart from a cup of tea and some toast and maybe not the slug. People want double fudge, chocolate caviar, sausage, gourmet jumbo size, baby cow, sheep, chicken with extra thick whipped cream and MSG sauce burgers, some of which is gross, some cruel, and most unhealthy. All Riley wanted was a little stick with a pointy end to scratch the bit of his back he couldn't reach himself. People, of course, want more than that. They want microwave, video, DVD, SMS, internet, big car, cost more than yours, gold, diamond, electronic, gigabyte, fastest, biggest, and smallest machines. People, of course, should never be allowed to have sticks with pointy ends because they stick them into each other. Riley looked in the mirror and didn't think anything. There he was, not too big, not too small, simply himself, Riley. People look in the mirror and get very depressed. They want to be taller, shorter, thinner here, but much bigger there. Curly, straight, younger, older, less spotty. Mustache, smooth skin, golden sun tan, gorgeous, irresistible, not bald and famous in a painting. The only place Riley ever wanted to be was here, which he always was. People, of course, they want to be everywhere. They want to go to the seaside ski resort, paradise, dream world, castaway, exclusive, you must be really rich if you can afford to come here, plaza, luxury, get away from it all, anywhere but here, theme park. Riley fell in love with the first girl he met. He thought she was perfect and the most beautiful girl he had ever seen. They had lots and lots of perfect children and all lived happily ever after, except Kevin, who got hit by a bus, but was still happy because he never saw it coming. People fall in love all over the place. They fall in love with themselves and as many other people as they can. They want to spend the rest of their lives for at least a month with the most beautiful, funniest, curviest, clever, but not as clever as me, exciting, I wonder what I ever saw in him, her, my wife, husband, partner, dog, doesn't understand me, do you come here often, anyone, everyone in the world. And one of the silly things about life is that people who spend so much time not eating what they really want in places where they don't want to be with people they don't like usually live for quite a long time. Whereas Riley, who spends all the time eating his favorite food, in his favorite place, with his favorite friends, only lives for a very short time. This is why it's never a good idea for people to compare their lives to animals. You will only end up feeling depressed. Because realizing that rats have a better life than you do is really, really sad. And the answer is very simple, really. You just have to be happy with a lot less. Release your inner Riley. And now you might be able to understand why that is my all-time favorite picture book. All right, now I'm going to read some fables from the Wallace and Ladmo Show Presents Aunt Maud's Storybook. And here's one called The Rabbit and the Bear. Once upon a time, there was a bear who kept picking on this rabbit. Every time they would pass in the hall, the bear would shove the rabbit for no reason at all. The rabbit always minded his own business and never started any trouble. But every day, the bear would push him around. At first, the rabbit tried to laugh it off, but it kept happening. After a while, the rabbit got fed up and decided to do something about it. He knew the bear was much bigger, but he couldn't put up with it any longer. So one day, he got a big stick and waited for the bear to appear. Pretty soon, the bear came down the hallway. The rabbit jumped out with a stick and started to swing. The bear took the stick away and broke it over the rabbit's head. The rabbit was treated for a mild concussion and left town immediately. And for a couple of years, there was an Easter bear until they found another rabbit for the job. All right. When a young brave grows up. Indian legend has it that when a young brave reaches the age of 12, he was taken to the mountains and left alone. This ritual was his test of manhood. If he found his way home, he passed the test. One such boy was Falling Rocks, nephew of Bouncing Boulders, and cousin of Sitting Stones. When Falling Rocks reached his 12th birthday, he was taken to the mountains and left there. Weeks passed, months passed, and he was never heard from again. To this day, there are signs along the highway through the mountains that say, "Watch for Falling Rocks." If they ever do find him, he's in big trouble for failing the test. Sir Arnold and the Dragon. In days of old, when nights were bold and days were hot and sticky, there lived a dragon named René. That was a dumb name for a dragon, but no one wanted to be the one to mention it to him. But there was this fair lady named Clarissa who told this knight, Sir Arnold, to mention it. She said, "Give that dragon some static about his name, or I won't go to the dance at the castle with you." So Sir Arnold put on his armor, was hoisted onto his horse, and pointed in the direction of the dragon. He galloped over the moat bridge and headed into the swamp in search of René the dragon. He finally found the dragon hanging around the 7-Eleven market. Sir Arnold said, "René is a dumb name for a dragon." The dragon let loose with a stream of fire out of its mouth and singed Sir Arnold's eyebrows. Sir Arnold went back to town. Clarissa took one look at him and said, "Man, you're ugly with no eyebrows." And to add insult to injury, she went to the dance with René instead of Arnold. They made a peculiar couple, and everyone noticed them, probably because the dragon was such a crummy dancer. He kept wanting to dip on the mambo numbers. Sir Arnold became a vacuum cleaner salesman, but that didn't work out because no one had wall sockets in those days. Clarissa ran away with a troubadour, and occasionally Renee's name would pop up in the personals under SGD, Single Green Dragon. Tom's family. Once upon a time, Bobby and Betty's father brought home a turkey. Bobby and Betty named him Tom and taught him lots of tricks. Tom came when he was called, fetched sticks, and brought in the newspaper. Everybody liked Tom the turkey. The day before Thanksgiving, Bobby and Betty's father went out in the yard looking for Tom. "Here, Tom! Here, Tom!" The next day, when it was time for Thanksgiving dinner, Bobby and Betty ran from the table, crying their little eyes out. Occasionally, since then, Tom's name will come up in a conversation, but Bobby and Betty quickly change the subject. The picnic. Once upon a time, it was a slow day in the forest, so all the animals got together and decided to have a picnic. "I'll bring the lemonade," said Charles the chipmunk. "I'll bring the cookies," said Bruce the bear. "And we'll bring ourselves," cried the ants, "because you can't have a picnic without ants." Just then, Morris the moose spoke up. "What about the sandwiches? Who's going to bring the sandwiches?" Everyone looked around. Finally, Dennis the duck said, "Okay, I'll bring the sandwiches." There was a polite ripple of applause, and then Elmo the elk said, "Let's all meet back here in an hour for the picnic." So Dennis the duck went home to make the sandwiches. It was a big responsibility because everyone knows sandwiches are the most important part of a picnic. Pretty soon, Dennis the duck had finished making 3 dozen really tasty-looking sandwiches. On the way back to the picnic, he got hungry, so he stopped to have one of the sandwiches. And another one. And another one. In fact, by the time Dennis the duck arrived at the picnic, he had eaten all the sandwiches. The rest of the animals were really upset, but the delicious roast duck helped everyone forget, and the picnic was a success after all. Okay, I'm going to finish up the first half hour of today's program with a couple of Shel Silverstein poems from his book, Everything on It. Friend, there's a bee on your head. Don't turn around. Don't move a muscle. Don't make a sound. Before he can sting you, I'll kill him dead. And you will be saved from that bee on your head. The kid eating land shark. Said the shark down in the ocean, "I do not understand why I'm starving in the water when there's fresh kids on the land. And why do folks keep saying that a shark can't swim on shore just because no shark has ever tried it out before?" So he swam up to the sandy shore and burrowed with his fin, and with a shout he stuck his snout 1 centimeter in. Another day, another inch, then 2, then 3, till he was swimming neath the land, the way he swam upon the sea. Now he's probably neath the sidewalk, while you run and jump and skate, but you'll never ever see him until it's much too late. So let this be a lesson to every shark and kid. Just 'cause something ain't been done don't mean it can't be did. And when you're playing in your yard, you'd better get up fast when you see a ziggin' zaggin' fin come zippin' through the grass. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for closely almost 9 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Darcy believes in love at first sight. She spent her whole life waiting for that perfect, magical moment. But right now, her life is anything but perfect. After a music festival, she's stranded at a bus station until morning, the day before she leaves for college. Her phone is dead, she has no cash, and she's convinced nothing good can come of this night. But then she meets Russell. Russell, cute and nice, funny and kind. This is the moment and the guy she's been waiting for. And they have until sunrise to walk and talk and connect. Over the course of this one fateful night, filled with football field picnics, night swimming, and escape artist dogs, Darcy and Russell's lives will change forever. They'll discover things they never imagined about each other and about themselves. But can you really know someone after only a handful of hours? Is it possible to fall in love in just one day? And is it worth saying hello when you know you're destined for a goodbye? Okay, last week, as they are driving to L.A., Darcy talked about possibly taking a gap year and suggested Russell write a musical about their favorite love story book, Theus's Sailboat. While driving, they got a blowout. Darcy worried about her dad arriving home before her. Darcy then recalled when she was young getting a flat tire and her mom fixing it before she never saw her mom again. Russell is now calling AAA to help fix the flat tire. And that's where I left off last week. Darcy, I looked around and saw Russell holding his phone. I got my card, and it looks like there's a 76 station a few miles from here, and they have a garage. So I'll call AAA, and they can tow us there. We're kind of in the middle of nowhere, so it might take them a while to get to us. But I think it's the best we're going to do. I looked back down into the trunk for a moment, or I said, before I even knew I was going to say, we could change it. We could? Russell stared at me. I mean, I can't. Have you changed a tire before? Well, I've seen someone do it. I knew this wasn't the same at all, and the last thing I wanted to do was mess up Wiley's prized Bronco. But if we could do this, it would save us a lot of time. We wouldn't have to wait for a tow truck to come and find us on the side of the highway. Maybe I'd even make it home before my dad. Maybe this could all still be okay. I mean, if you think you can, that's amazing, he said. My mom would be so impressed with you. Well, I haven't actually done it, but I know it can be done. So maybe we could find a YouTube video just to be on the safe side. Russell nodded. That I can do. I gave him a smile, then twisted my hair up into a knot on the top of my head and pulled the end through so it stayed. Russell Googled change tire, how to video easy. And we watched it 3 times in a row before we even attempted it. The host was a cheerful Texan guy who made the whole thing seem simple and even like a fun adventure. But what had seemed so easy watching it as a kid was a lot harder in real life. It took both me and Russell several times with the wrench to even get the lug nuts to loosen a little. The longer everything took, the more I was starting to feel myself getting nervous. I was hot and dusty and wondering if this was just a huge mistake. Let me try again, I said, reaching for the wrench. The sweat was beating on my forehead and dripping down my back, and I couldn't stop myself from pulling out my phone to check the time on the map once again. As I looked, my stomach clenched. I could see just how much time had been added to our arrival, and we weren't even on the road yet. Russell wasn't saying anything, but what if I'd missed this up? What if we had to call AAA now and had to wait all this time for them to come? If I hadn't suggested this, would we have already been to a garage by now, with the tire halfway to getting fixed by a professional? "I think I've almost got it," Russell said, putting all his weight on the wrench, and finally I saw the last lug nut grudgingly turn. "Okay," he said, smiling up at me. "According to the video, now we jack up the car." "I'll get it," I said, as I hurried to the trunk. I was doing the math in my head. If we could get the tire on and get on the road, maybe we could get there in time. I had just reached for the jack when my phone started to ring. It was "Fun, Fun, Fun," my dad's ringtone. "Fuck," I muttered as I pulled my phone out of my back pocket. My heart was pounding as I slid my finger across the screen. "Hi, Dad. I'm just driving," I said quickly, knowing he'd be able to hear the sound of the cars. "Near home. Good old 134. My voice was too high and shrill, and I had a feeling he'd be able to tell something was wrong. Russell glanced over at me, his eyes going wide, and I knew he'd just had the same thought I had, that I was in trouble. "Darcy," my dad said, "so, are you home?" I asked, my words tumbling out. "I mean, where are you?" "There might be a chance we could make it back unless he was already there, in which case there was no chance and I was screwed." "No, that's the thing," I straightened up, clocking his tone. "I wasn't in trouble. I couldn't tell that much, but something else was happening. What's wrong?" So I got on the road this morning and hadn't gone far before the check engine light went on." "So you left late?" I held my phone away from my ear for a moment to see the time, trying to do the calculations. "Well, I'm still at Uncle Jeff's," my dad's voice was resigned. "I can't get the car into a shop until tomorrow morning." I felt an immediate giddy surge of happiness. I'd get away with this. My dad wouldn't have to know about the fact that I was currently on the side of the highway with a flat, that I'd still not made it back, that I'd almost gotten arrested. At least, he wouldn't have to know about any of it right now. I was pretty sure I was going to have to tell him at some point, but that day would not have to be today. Relief washed over me like a cool wave. I could stop panicking. I could stop doing the time math. I was home free. But then, a second later, with a crash of disappointment, I realized what this actually meant. "So you're not coming home tonight?" "I'm so sorry, honey," my dad said, and I could hear in his voice that he really was. "I asked your uncle if I could use his car, but he needs it for work, and..." "No, it's fine," I said quickly, trying to ignore the pit that felt like it had just formed in my stomach. "Really, I can get myself to the airport. I'll get an Uber. It's not a big deal." Russell straightened up, his eyes on me, giving me a sympathetic wince. "It is, though," my dad said. And I could hear how frustrated he was. "We had our whole plan, pizza and milkshakes, and then short-term parking, and the discreet corner where I'd sob while you went off to start your life without me. I know we did. In all my worry about my dad getting home before me, I'd never once entertained the thought that he wouldn't be there. I had wanted to get away with this. I'd wanted there to be some way I'd get home before my dad undetected. And now I was getting my wish, but in a terrible monkey's paw way. I took a few steps away and rubbed my sandal over the crumbling asphalt. I'm so sorry, kiddo. No, it's not your fault. Mechanical problems happen after all. Mechanical problems were the whole reason I was standing here right now, and the whole reason Russell and I had even met in the first place. Well, I'm still sorry. Why don't you call me at the airport, and I'll give you the speech I prepared. I laughed in spite of myself. You did not write a speech. I did so just FaceTime me, and I'll tell it to you. It's a plan. So how was the festival? I want to hear all about it. Well, I started to try to organize my thoughts, then gave up when I realized there was no simple way to even start doing this. I was really different than I expected, but good. Okay, I'll have to get the whole story later, for sure. I heard my dad take a breath and let it out. I love you, kid. I smiled. I love you, too. We'll talk tonight, okay, when you're at the gate. Sounds good. I hung up and just stood there for a moment, breathing in the dust and gasoline fumes, trying to push down the disappointment and sadness that was threatening to bubble up. Or, you know, Dee Dee suggested, you could just let yourself feel it. That works too, Katie chimed in. That really sucks. Russell's voice was soft. I turned around and saw he was standing in front of me, his sunglasses pushed on top of his head. It's really okay. I'll get an Uber to the airport. I'm sorry, Darcy. No, it's fine. I said this automatically, but then, a second later, wondered if it really was. It's just a stupid rite of passage, you know, saying goodbye at the airport, and it's probably not that important. I think I've just seen too many movies about it. So I was attaching all this meaning to it. But maybe we have these rites of passage for a reason. It was important to you. I shrugged even as I nodded. Well, I'll FaceTime with my dad at the gate, and we'll just do it remotely. If it's really important that the person who drives me to the airport is sad to see me go, I can really try to dazzle my Uber driver or say something. Russell laughed at that, but when I followed the thought to its logical end, that I would be hauling my suitcase out of a stranger's car myself, heading off to college without anyone to hug me and tell me they'd miss me, I felt a lump in my throat. And for once, I didn't try to just push the feeling away. Finally, Katie cheered. About time, Dee Dee added. But it does suck, I agreed with a sigh. Like, I know things sometimes don't turn out the way you expected, but I thought I would get this at least before everything else started, you know. I felt my chin tremble, and I pressed my lips together. Russell took a step closer to me. He closed the distance between us and pulled me into his arms. I leaned against him, my cheek resting on the soft fabric of his yellow shirt, warmed by the sun. I closed my eyes and let out a shaky breath, and he ran his hand over my hair, stroking it gently. After a few moments, I straightened up again, even though it felt like I could have stayed there for a lot longer. I knew we needed to finish this. We better get moving. We don't have a minute to spare. Oh, Russell took a step back himself and smiled at me. Oh, the puns have returned, I see. I mean, doing this ourselves is better than getting a professional. They'd just jack up the prices. Oh, very nice. You're not tired of them. Okay, he said, shaking his head. That might have been a bridge too far. I knew it would fall flat, he groaned, and I smiled at him, even though my heart wasn't quite in it. With the help of Russell's video, we got the car jacked up and the spare on. When we'd tightened the lug nuts and put the hubcap back on, we looked at each other in silent amazement. Did we just do that? Russell asked. I think we did. I was still sweaty and my back was sore, but we'd changed a tire. And in that moment, the only person I wanted to tell was Jillian. Go team, Russell said, holding up his hand. Go team, I said, laughing as I slapped his palm. Russell drove us, very slowly, hazards on to the 76 with the garage that he'd found. We didn't play any music or even talk, both of us sitting very still, listening for any signs of trouble or indications that the tire had been put back on wrong and was currently detaching itself and rolling down the highway. I didn't start to breathe easier until we pulled into the garage part of the gas station and Russell cut the engine. Even if we'd done things wrong, we'd made it this far. Russell went to the garage to see if he could find a mechanic to look at the tire and check if we'd done it okay. And I headed into the mini mart, enjoying the blast of air conditioning that hit me as I stepped inside. I used the bathroom and washed my hands for much longer than usual, trying to get the grease off them. When I came back out, I could see Russell still in the garage area, talking to a 76 employee in coveralls. Feeling like I needed to stretch my legs, I walked in the opposite direction toward the parking lot and just beyond it, the highway. I pulled out my phone to check the time on the map automatically before I remembered there was no need for this. We didn't have to hurry anymore. I was definitely going to get home before my dad now, because I wasn't going to see him before I went to college. I had to draw in a breath as a wave of sadness walloped me. To have to do this on my own, on both ends, suddenly felt really unfair, and the tears that had been lurking behind my eyes edged closer to falling. Jillian did offer to pick you up, Katie reminded me, her voice gentle. You shut it down. I had shut it down because I hadn't wanted to, what, give her the satisfaction of helping me? It seemed so stupid now and so childish. All at once, my thoughts were racing, going as fast as the car tearing down the highway. Images and flashes of memories were flooding my mind. Jillian smiling across the car at me, McDonald's bag between us, Chloe looking impossibly young, picking up her daughter, Wiley in the morning sunlight, talking about dashed dreams, and Andy running away and not being able to find his way home again. Something that Dee Dee and Katie had said was echoing in my mind. Darcy, you know we're not actually here, right? That we've never been here. That there's actually nobody here but you. I took a breath, then let it out. Of course I knew this. I'd always known it. I wasn't disassociating or anything. Dee Dee was at Colgate in upstate New York. Katie was at Scripps in Claremont. I hadn't talked to either of them. Neither one had any idea about anything that had happened over the course of the last day. They'd never even heard of Russell. It had just seemed easier, less lonely, to imagine what they would say in this situation. But it had been me this whole time, which meant I actually knew what I wanted to do, even if I needed to pretend to be my best friends in order to have it. I unlocked my phone, my hand hesitating over the screen for a moment. Then I pressed the button to call my mother. Chapter 19, Monday, 1:45 p.m. I held the phone against my ear, listening to it ring. What if I finally got up the courage to call her, and it went right to voicemail? I had just resigned myself to this when Jillian picked up, sounding out of breath. Hello, Darcy? Hi. I hated that tears had sprung to my eyes at that very sound of her voice, and I blinked them back impatiently. Is everything okay? Did something happen? I could hear she sounded worried, which was understandable. I never called her up just to chat. No, everything's fine, I swallowed hard. I looked out at the cars flying past, everyone heading somewhere. For a second, I got overwhelmed by it all the stories contained in all of them, all the loves and losses and heartbreaks. Focus, I reminded myself, since I didn't want to rely on Dee Dee and Katie to do this anymore. I changed a tire. You what? Jillian sounded utterly thrown by this, and I didn't blame her. Yeah, I'm on a drive with a friend, and the tire went flat, and we changed it. You showed me how, remember, in Oregon? I do, Jillian said slowly, like she was also pulling this memory over a decade old from the recesses of her mind. But that's not really why I called. I pressed my lips together and made myself say it. I wanted to apologize for last night. I shouldn't have said those things to you, and I'm sorry. Wow, okay, Jillian said. It was like I could practically feel her regrouping over the phone. That's not what I was expecting. Thank you. I guess, I said, making myself go on, knowing that if I stopped to think about what I was doing, I wouldn't get through it. This was walking on a balance beam or doing a backflip off a diving board. If you thought too hard about how impossible the thing you were doing was, you'd never accomplish it. I've been really mad at you for a while now, and I probably should have just talked to you about it, but I shook my head. I was now regretting not figuring out what I was going to say before I started this. But that ship had sailed, and here we were. There was no way out but through. I was mad that you left, that I didn't get to see you, like, ever, and then you started a whole new family with someone else and forgot all about me. And then it seemed, my voice was hitching in my throat, and hot tears had started to snake down my cheeks. I took a shaky breath. Well, it seemed like you wanted me to just forget about it all when I'd said I'd go to Stanwyck's. Like, that made up for everything. Like you were trying to buy me off or something. Like a bribe. And I swallowed hard and lifted my sunglasses up to wipe my face. Darcy, I never forgot about you. Never, ever. Her voice was fierce, and it sounded like maybe there were tears on her end as well. You're my daughter, and not a day goes by that I don't wish that I would have done some things differently. I heard her take a hitching breath on the other end of the phone, 3,000 miles away from me. I was so happy when I heard you got into Stanwyck, and so proud, and I thought that maybe it could be a fresh start for you and me. I was talking to the words. Wiley Sanders floated through my mind, but I didn't want to derail this conversation by bringing a rock star into it. To someone this morning, and they said that as a parent, you just want to do what you can to help your kids. And I hadn't thought of it like that until now. Oh, Darcy, Jillian sighed. I never meant for you to see it as a bribe. It was just... There was a pause, and for a second I wished I knew what she looked like right now, where she was, at work, in her kitchen, in her house in Connecticut. I couldn't even picture it, but maybe soon I would be able to. I'd been so dismissive of her, so angry that she didn't know anything about my life, not factoring in until now that this went both ways, that I also didn't know nearly enough about her. After a moment, she went on, a slight tremble in her voice. There's so much I wasn't there for, so much I didn't give you, and I just thought that this was finally something I could do for you. I looked out at the traffic as the warm breeze lifted my hair, the hair I'd inherited from her, and blew it all around me. I didn't understand just how young you and Dad were when you had me, and I know I probably got in the way of things you wanted to do. No, Jillian's voice was firm. You were the best thing I ever did, Darcy. And I might regret what I did and how I handled things, but I never regretted you, not once. My eyes filled with fresh tears, like the ones I was already crying weren't quite enough. I heard her take a halting breath and then continue, and I know I probably don't deserve one, but if you could see your way to giving me a second chance, that would make me really happy. I wiped the tears from my eyes. It felt like all the things I'd so firmly believed were breaking up and floating away. Suddenly, it was like I could see everything from a new angle. What if being around Jillian this year wasn't going to be the worst thing in the world? Some kind of punishment? What if I could actually be an opportunity to finally get to know my mother? Because this was all I'd wanted when I was younger. More time with my mom. To actually be in the same place that she was. It suddenly seemed beyond petty that I was turning my back on this because it wasn't happening in the timeline I'd wanted. And unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the fascinating novel titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.